and welcome back to the FPL Lounge podcast. We are back with a very quick turnaround game week 23 preview ahead of another exciting game week of football and FPL. My name is Chris Hopkins and I'm joined by the Alan Shearer to my Darwin Núñez. It's Andy Case. I mean, I feel a little bit unfair on Darwin there because ultimately he does have a pretty good penalty record. Alan Shearer famously had a very good penalty record, but he just can't catch a break, this boy, can he? I think he's hit the woodwork more than anyone else by quite a distance in the league. I think even in all competitions this year. And yeah, as we record, he's missed a penalty. You do feel a little bit sorry for him, but then equally, I do find it quite funny just because of the kind of character he is, and that he's just, you can't take your eyes off him because he's so unpredictable. And yeah, I guess from the point of this podcast, not a very good FPL asset, is he?
Well, I mean, no. I mean, other people would tell you differently. A lot of people have been bringing him in and that. But I think that's why I can't not find it a bit funny, right? I mean, obviously, I have the fact that he's a Liverpool player that makes it even funnier for me. But it's as well the fact that you've got so many people like saying, you know, stick by him. Eventually, he'll start scoring them. He scored loads in Portugal. You know, it'll come sort of thing. And whilst I kind of can understand that, like, point of view, ultimately he's been in the Premier League now for like what, 18 months was it, last season, like he has consistently shown missing good chances. So at what point do you go, well, yeah, he did convert a lot of them in Portugal, but like for whatever reason, you know, he isn't doing that now. So yeah, I think if he was a bit cheaper in the game, maybe you could take a gamble at some point. But for me, for the investment, and particularly when Liverpool have, because I thought where you might have gone would have been the Diogo Jota to the Darwin Núñez. And yeah, obviously he's having a very different path and has always shown to be a good finisher, hasn't he? So when there are other places to get your points from that Liverpool squad, then even less reason that you might want to like look towards Núñez, I guess. Yeah,
absolutely. I mean, his this is before this game week, so you know, worth it's going to be worth now unless obviously he ends up scoring. But Núñez's XG delta so far this season and in the league, what would you hazard a guess at it being?
Well, I think it's probably got to be relatively big, because not just because of the fact he's notoriously missed lots of chances, but he has actually accumulated quite a lot of XG. There's been many points in the season, hasn't there, where he's been up there on the underlying numbers. So what, -3.6?
A little bit high, but yeah, -2.5. He is the fourth worst forward in FPL this year for XG delta. And yeah, I mean, who's above him? How's the guess at any of them?
Right. Well, I mean, obviously for the Bants, it's got to be Neil Mapai.
Neil Mapai is above him.
Yeah, how obviously. Is he above him? Like, how? Like, Núñez's XG must be much higher than Mapai's, right?
Yeah, almost double.
Right. So Mapai's got half the XG, but a bigger delta. Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah, I mean, they're basically the same, but yes.
But even still, still having the same delta from half the XG, I mean, come on.
Like, there's another one pretty obvious, given that a lot has been made of his finishing, but what he brings to the team this year, plays for a big 16, but not...
Oh, yeah, well, it must be Nick Jackson.
Yeah. Who's worst, do you think? We haven't got him yet, but he has featured on our radar a couple of times this year.
Oh, who's worse? Has featured on our radar. Jesus?
No. I guess you're kind of in the right wheelhouse. He usually features on our radar because he's relatively affordable. But yeah, forward that that ultimately we put him on there because he's had good underlying numbers and historically been quite a good finisher. But this year, not really going for him.
Well, I'm not going to get there. Go on.
Dominic Calvert-Lewin.
DCL.
Has a delta of nearly -5.
Whoa.
Yeah,
jeez.
That's saying a lot, isn't it? But yeah, that's pretty big. But yeah, anyway, I mean, do feel sorry for
just
Darwin.
Lols that Mapai's in there. I mean,
he's got to be, isn't he? He's got to be.
Every season.
all part of the fun and games. Actually, Brentford have two players in the top five. This is in the top five as well. So yeah, they desperately need. I'm glad that they've got Ivan Toney back, I'm sure. Anyway, let's crack on with the with our Game Week 23 preview. As always, we'll start by running down the Game Week's fixtures. We'll have a quick chat about this week's talking points, of which there are very few given the turnaround from our last show. We'll have a quick chat about some new players on the radar for you. We will be trying to catch each other in our honey traps, as there haven't been that many transfers so far ahead of Game Week 23. And then we'll finish with captaincy and who the heck is Stat. Let's start then by running down those all-important Game Week 23 fixtures. Your deadline for this Game Week 23 is Saturday the 3rd of February at 11 o'clock UK time, and that's because our 12:30 kickoff is Everton hosting Spurs. We've got three 3 o'clock kickoffs. They're the M62 Derby. Is it the M62 Derby? Can't remember what the road is, Andy, but it's M53 Derby. One of the M's.
A, I think it's an A. That's what A, that's oh. Why it's always so controversial, because it's such a pathetic name. It's like the A26 Derby or something.
I think the M62 is actually the one that runs across the country from where I live to where I went to university. It's that was the old all the rugby league towns. Anyway, it's the not Derby that is a Derby, although these two teams would probably argue with me on that. It's Brighton versus Crystal Palace. Then we've got Burnley, Fulham and Newcastle, Luton at 3 o'clock, before the tea time kickoff on Saturday is Sheffield United versus Aston Villa.
On Sunday, we've got Bournemouth versus Forest, Chelsea versus Wolves, Man United versus West Ham, and the top of the table clash, Arsenal versus Liverpool, a biggie. And Monday night football sees Brentford versus Manchester City.
Lovely stuff. So yeah, Andy, obviously we're recording this literally about 30 hours after our last after the deadline, at least, not since we've recorded the last show. But yeah, obviously not a lot has changed in terms of FPL. There was plenty of news for us to get our listeners caught up on ahead of 22, particularly in terms of blanks and strategy and things like that. I guess there was maybe one kind of strategic point that when we get to the radar, that we've definitely tried to take off players that are going to end up blanking in Game Week 26, I guess at this stage, with so few games to go before then and plenty to think about, I don't think we would advocate bringing any of those players in. But other than that, there's not loads to talk about here. We will just briefly mention one player before we maybe mention him a little bit more, and that is Erling Haaland. Obviously, his injury status is probably the talk of FPL Twitter, really, at the moment. And he has come off the bench this evening for 20 minutes. Don't think he's managed to return or anything like that, unless I've missed it in the last few. But yeah, I guess that's ultimately good news. It's going to give managers something of a headache, I guess, over what to do with him ahead of Game Week 23. But I guess we can come on to that in a little while. The other, I guess, bit of news is transfer deadline day being tomorrow. But again, we're not really seeing loads and loads of business. I don't think many clubs have been doing lots of business in January, and I guess we're not really expecting any sort of high profile moves that are likely to impact FPL or even bring in a player that's going to be really hitting the ground running in FPL this side of Christmas.
No, I mean, it's going to be there could be a few moves here and there from the sounds of it on transfer deadline day, but yeah, I mean, no, like, major ones kind of brewing, is there? As a United fan, I'm hoping they might sign another flipping striker, but we'll see. If it is, it's not going to be anyone like dramatic, probably. Some chat around from an FPL point of view, some talk about Sam Johnston going to Forest, which he would be immediately first choice there, and he isn't necessarily at Palace, as he's Henderson's got the shirt at the moment, so that could potentially be an interesting and useful one. But other than that, there's nothing that's really jumping off the top of my mind in terms of useful things. But you know, transfer deadline days, I suppose historically more so than recently, but still can sometimes just spring a surprise someone out of nowhere, can't they? With the Euros this summer as well, that's often a thing, isn't it, where players want to be getting game time to be trying to make their respective squads.
Yeah, clamouring for a move to, yeah, as you say, get minutes and be in their international manager's thoughts is definitely an old cliche, but probably does ring true to some extent. So yeah, one to keep a bit of an eye on.
A la Calvin Phillips,
indeed. Yeah, I mean, I guess that we're not expecting that to hugely change sort of how West Ham play, but I think you've messaged me, I think, about broadly that you're quite impressed with West Ham's business and in the last couple of windows, and I think that's pretty fair. I feel like they still need a bit of a deeper squad, but yeah, they've had ownership changes though, haven't they? I feel like gone are the days of the Sullivan and Gold and Brady. So yeah, it feels a little bit more more normal there, or more strategic, let's say, rather than
one of them passed away, Chris, didn't it? I think that's how you get an ownership change there. Was
sure,
it Gold?
I think all of the others ended up sort of leaving as well, unless I'm quite mistaken.
I don't know. I can't remember what happened. Yeah. Sure.
But yeah, anyway, they seem to be a bit better run in general than they were, a couple of years ago. And yeah, definitely less of a scattergun approach to transfers. Let's move on then to the centre of our radar, Andy, and we do have someone on the centre of our radar, and I guess it's the most obvious player that we could ever make it be. I think, was it last year we maybe had Mo Salah on the centre of our radar for a game week? I mean, that felt pretty...
I think it was earlier this season. I feel like it was. Yeah.
I mean, all of the episodes with you, Andy, they just lead into one long, wonderful time. What can I say?
Oh, okay.
So anyway, this week it is Erling Haaland. I guess this is less of a conversation, Andy, about whether you should bring him into your team or not. I mean, I guess by pure definition of the fact that he's on our radar means that we believe that you should be bringing him into your team. But I guess there is a slight question mark over the timing. There is perhaps also a question mark about where he fits in with other premium assets. I guess there is still, for many, a route to wanting to get Mo Salah back now that he did throughout the African Cup of Nations, and he is supposedly on his way back to being fit. Kevin De Bruyne definitely adds a wrinkle to this that was not the case earlier in the season. And obviously Trent Alexander-Arnold has been increasingly popular, or was increasingly popular before Christmas in FPL teams. He was getting a lot of returns, and Liverpool's clean sheet likelihood seemed to have increased a lot with better underlying defensive numbers. Owning them all, and obviously Son's going to be returning as well from the Asian Cup relatively soon. So there are more premiums, I guess, available in the game, or there will be soon. And there were some before Haaland got injured that we're still going without him anyway. He hasn't been perhaps as locked in as he was last year, maybe partly down to his increased price this year. I mean, I know where you stand on him, but just for the avoidance of listeners' doubt, I mean, where do you think you'll end up going regarding Erling Haaland?
I mean, not many went without him, right? It was like over 90% owned before the injury. And I mean, there are potential upsides to having other premium assets, but like I just think he has to be number one, doesn't it? We saw it all last season, even this season, he can get 2-3 goals in any given game, right? Like not only is his ceiling probably higher than any other player, but he like reaches it more often than any other player, right? So close to it. So He gets loads of chances. He's a very good finisher. I mean, and part of him maybe not being as outrageous with his numbers as last season is because City haven't been quite like clicking quite so well either themselves, have they? So, I mean, it's sort of a chicken and an egg situation a little bit there. Which ones affect it? Are City not doing as well because Haaland not taking his chances as well? I don't know, but I mean, I think with KDB back, he played the majority of last season, didn't he? And with him back now, that could make a real difference to the creativity behind Haaland. So I just think it's such a huge risk. If a goal a game and an XG a game and a goal a game is a bad season for Haaland, then like I'm very happy to ride that bad season. Do you know what I mean? So a kind of guaranteed goal a game striker is still worth what you're paying for him, I think.
Yeah, I think that is completely fair, and I think that's probably where you kind of ultimately need to come down on this. Like I guess his XG has been still good this year. He's got 14 goals off an XG of basically, if you round it up to to 15, which, you know, obviously isn't quite going at the sort of superior rate that he was going at last year. But I think in general, there aren't that many forwards, I don't think, in FPL anyway, that are sort of outperforming their underlying numbers this year. I mean, even Mo Salah, I think he is slightly, very, very slightly underperforming his underlying numbers. I think, you know, we've already spoken about Darwin Nunez and Nick Jackson across the course of the season. They're the, you know, they're two others that have an XG of over 10. Alexander Isak has one of around 10. Ollie Watkins too. They're not overperforming their underlying numbers either. So Haaland's not doing any worse than any other forward in the game, and he's still getting more chances than any other forward in the game. I guess it is just a bit of a drop off for him from last year, where he outperformed his underlying numbers by 7.5 goals by the end of the season. So in theory, by this point, you'd expected him to have outperformed them by about 3.5 goals, which in the grand scheme of FPL points, isn't that many. And also, you know, going without him is such a risk. And dare we also, you know, add into the fact that City do have a double game week in game week 25. He's going to be a very popular captaincy choice in that game week. He's probably going to be quite a popular triple captaincy choice in that game week, and not owning him and he hauls is going to be very, very risky. I guess where we are still maybe a little bit unsure, Andy, is like, do you do it this week? You know, he's come on tonight for a 20-minute cameo. He replaced Kevin De Bruyne, so one would assume that Julian Alvarez, therefore, who started up front and scored twice, then went slightly deeper. But you know, it's hard to drop Alvarez. How is Pep going to keep Alvarez and De Bruyne and Foden in the team? Something's going to have to give. And if there are still some lingering doubts about Haaland's fitness, you know, does he play the full 90 this game week? Does he start on the bench this game week? And I guess those are still questions that some are going to have to ask themselves. Again, that said, his price rose overnight. So even from yesterday's deadline, enough managers brought him in already to increase his price. And one would imagine that that's only going to go one way before, as we get closer to this Saturday deadline.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, a lot of people going to have money in the bank or whatever to try and get him in anyway. So you don't want to be sort of priced out down the line. I just think as well, the chance of him, he may well not start. He may well not play the full 90 minutes, but the chance of him starting, the chance of him playing 60, 70 minutes has increased significantly now that he's been back in the squad and had some minutes off the bench, right? So again, do you want to take the gamble? Like at this point in time, I think I'd probably have to say that it seems more likely that he will start than he won't. But, you know, even if it was slightly less, even if it was like a 35, 40% chance that he starts, do you want to take that risk in case he does, you know? And I'm not sure that I would do. Also as well, in terms of just the underlying numbers thing, I don't know how he was on XGI last season, but if you extend to looking at that, not just XG, he is, you know, overperforming. He's had 19 attacking returns from 16.4 XGI. So, you know, overall returns, 19 attacking returns in 15 starts, like you're getting more than a return per game from him. And for strikers, obviously the assist is only 1 point less than the goal, so you know, still pretty valuable there. And I mean, his standards from last season obviously maybe you know, warping things a little bit. Maybe someone out there could make an argument possibly that what KDB's 3.5 mil ish cheaper. Can you use that money, you know, to try and enable you to have like Salah and Trent or Salah and Son, and maybe that would help. And so I suppose like there maybe is a situation where the extra that KDB and Salah add to your team over whoever you'd have alongside Haaland, you know, I guess what, like Haaland, Foden, Salah, or Salah, KDB, and then another striker, you still got to take into account the fact that who's that other striker going to be? Are they going to, which collective of three or four is going to bring you the most points overall? I guess it just feels like that Haaland's always going to be the right answer, basically. Well, going around the houses a bit, but it just feels like, yeah, he is that guy, isn't he?
Yeah, I think that's completely fair. And yeah, I mean, you know, comparing him to last year versus this year is tricky. And obviously, he did set, you know, almost impossible standards for himself. But ultimately, his price was very appealing last year. He was so hugely underpriced in FPL at the start of last year. And I guess there, you know, it is quite a jump from that. But therefore, you know, I still think he's absolutely worth it, and he's going to be incredibly popular. You know, it's a bit of a waste of a spot in your team, because everybody is going to end up having him, or at least, you know, 80-90% of managers are going to end up having him. But yeah, or you've almost got to have him. So, you know, to avoid the rank drops that his returns can get you, and yeah, but either way, you know, he is ultimately a good player to root for. I'm still sure there's going to be some interesting captaincy discussions when him and Salah are back this season. So yeah, he is definitely worth phoning him. I think he justifies, even if it is incredibly obvious, he justifies a place on the centre of our radar. Usually it's the centre that's pretty bare, but this game week it is the mid-range. I guess might just be worth reflecting on why it is empty and where the players have gone that occupied this position last game week. Obviously, Purvis Estupiñán was one. He ended up getting hooked at half-time, and as Brighton conceded four against Luton. I mean, I guess that isn't really the real reason why we're kind of getting rid of here. I think at this point, we've spoken about him for a fair number of weeks, and I think it's time to either get on or not bother, frankly. But yeah, I guess Brighton having a bit of a collapse and hooking players at half-time is all part of the De Zerbi experience. And for someone like Estupiñán, you've kind of either got to ride it or just choose to avoid.
Yeah, well, exactly. Yeah, I mean, he's not on because, yeah, there's no more to say on him, really. Their fixture run is still decent, so maybe there's still an opportunity to get on him if you haven't yet. But we you know, we don't want him on the radar for multiple weeks, really.
Yeah, and then I guess for Richarlison, despite his goal tonight, it's that blank in 26, isn't it, that sort of takes him off the radar for us, because I don't think we'd really be recommending that you'd be investing in a Tottenham player, at least, that blanks in 26. If you're going to invest in any player that blanks in 26, maybe it should be a Liverpool player that doubles beforehand. Or maybe, if we segue nicely onto our fringe, it could be someone like Elijah Adebayo. I think we've kind of toyed with this one, Andy, a little bit, and this is very much a fringe pick, and I think this is the fringest of fringe picks. But Elijah Adebayo obviously has caught the headlines from a hat-trick for Luton in that aforementioned Brighton game this game week. But he does very much feel like, at the minute, the most affordable forward under £5 million. And if you do want to get Haaland back, and if you do want to get Salah back when he's fit, and if you do want to try and keep Trent Alexander-Arnold, then ultimately you're going to have to make some cuts elsewhere. And Adebayo, I mean, he does feel he's a bit more pricey than, say, your Cameron Archer at 4.4. So if you are looking to really save the most amount of money, then Cameron Archer is probably the way to go. But Archer's a player that hasn't started either of Sheffield United's last three games, whereas Adebayo's, I think, started Luton's last eight or nine and scored six times in that period, albeit three were in the last game week. The difficulty with him, Andy, is that he does blank in game week 26. So, you know, for all of the advantages that he's got, he does have a huge sort of black mark to his name and I guess in the fixture ticker. So you're going to have to tread carefully if you do choose to bring him in and to make sure that you're still covered for 26. But there aren't many better places to look from a pure affordability point of view if you do need to make, you know, cut your spend down on your forward line to make room for some of these big premium assets.
Yeah, and I think as well, another word of caution is that, like, we haven't actually, there's still not been, which we thought there might have been by this point, a confirmation of a double in 25 for what it would be Luton and Liverpool, wouldn't it? So, yeah, we said in the last show that the suspicion was that there isn't really many other places that could go for Liverpool, particularly if they stay in Europe. So the very strong likelihood of that being announced for game week 25. But we're obviously getting closer and closer now. And, like, you know, in terms of, I think, isn't there some kind of, I don't know whether it's a rule or kind of like a thing they try to keep to if they can, of like giving at least 14 days for away fans.
I think that's so true, yeah.
to make travel rooms, and we can't be really too far off that now if it's going to happen in game week 25. So I guess that's a word of caution on you know, the point that getting a Luton or Liverpool player, even though they blank in 26, is in some way mitigated by the fact that they might double in 25, because that hasn't been confirmed yet, right? But all of that big caveat aside, I think, yeah, we'd be lying if we didn't say that the hat-trick and the increased XG that came from it didn't help put him on our radar more. So there is a bit of recency bias in this. But actually, when you look into the numbers a bit deeper, I mean, he has 0.5 non-penalty XG per 90, across all his minutes this season, and 6 goals in 10 starts, 11 starts, plus a few bits of minutes in 11 sub appearances, and all that, but a lot of those starts have been recently, so perhaps that suggests he's worked his way into the team. At his price, essentially like a goal every other game is if and that's the big if, isn't it? That continues and that is to be sustainable. That's a pretty good, I mean, that's more than pretty good, really. Like, I think we'd be saying a 6-7, maybe even £8 million striker, as much as if we knew they were going to be getting a goal every game and starting most games, would be a fair kind of price. So yeah, 4.8 million. I think obviously we have less information and certainty about those starts kind of definitely continuing, but it's if you're looking to, as you say, free up the cash, it's not the most essential that, you know, you want it to continue. But even if we were at the start of the season saying any 4.5 million starting striker getting you the minimum sort of 2 points as your appearance points would help to, if it helps facilitate having both Salah and Haaland in your team, then it's worth it on its own. So if there is like a flutter, and at the moment more than a slight flutter of some goal like opportunities for that person who's your enabler as well, then it's definitely interesting. Just to highlight even further, sorry, those underlying numbers, you know, at the moment, as it stands, second for non-penalty XG in the entire game over his last 6 matches. He's about to be overtaken by Richarlison and Nunes, because they will have both accumulated a fair bit of non-penalty XG in their respective games tonight. But still, to be within that range, within like a top 5 for a 4.8 million like striker, yeah, good option.
Yeah, I mean, I think that per 90 stat that you pulled out, I think is really interesting, sort of generating a return every 2 games. I think for a Luton Town forward that's 4.8 million, I think you've got to kind of snap your hand off at that. And there were times very much earlier in the season where the FPL community was, they weren't bringing him in en masse, but, Carlton Morris was this vaguely popular FPL asset, a lot to do with penalties perhaps. But I think the fact is that, so far this season, per 90, Elijah Adebayo has better underlying numbers than Carlton Morris. Carlton Morris obviously has the advantage of being on penalties, but also is a little bit more expensive. And I think Luton are just playing better now. And I think all of those things added together sort of maybe would maybe lean you towards towards bringing him in if you did need the funds elsewhere. And maybe you would need the funds elsewhere for Kevin De Bruyne, who does remain on the fringe of our radar. Obviously, he got a start tonight, and he got an assist as well. I think those that have brought him in, those that have taken the risk, are going to be pretty popular, or are going to be pretty happy, with what he's ended up with. I think he's still a bit of a minutes risk. I think, he only played 70 tonight. It's shortish turnaround for City until their next game, although they do play quite late in the next game week, so maybe it isn't. But I feel like minutes are still going to be managed for him. He's not going to start week in, week out, one wouldn't have thought. And he's still pretty pricey, but ultimately when he is on the pitch, we know what he can do, and he's as good an option as anyone in the game.
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. I think I suppose it relates a little bit to the conversation we had earlier on Haaland, in the sense that, like, can you have Haaland and KDB? Maybe. Can you have Haaland, KDB and Salah? Like, definitely not. So, well, almost definitely not, right? So down the line, might you have to reconsider things, and then are you using transfers? But I suppose there's an argument that, like, you could get on KDB and then try and find the extra couple of million later to go up to Salah if you need to. So, like, for those who I can understand more now, really, those who brought him in this game week, perhaps with that thinking, and also because City will double in definitely double in 25. So, you might not be as desperate to need to get Salah in for that double and perhaps wait till after the blank if you've got KDB there. So there is always an expected minutes risk with almost any City player, even if KDB was like 100% fit. You'd feel he was fairly nailed whenever fit, but like with Europe coming up and the City are one of the teams where Europe is fairly soon for them. It's between game week 24 and 25, so that adds an extra little threat there. But yeah, look, his ceiling is incredible. He got another assist tonight. He's always just so creative. It's hard not to think about him in the moves you might be making.
Yeah, absolutely. Couldn't have put it better myself. Final player Andy added to fringe of our radar. I'm going to let you talk this one through, but I think it's fair to say this isn't an underlying numbers pick. This is a pure vibes pick, and I'm completely here for it.
Yeah, well, I mean, he almost got on here as a pure vibes pick last game week, didn't he? And like, he scored this week, so it's very annoying. I didn't end up having him on the radar or putting him in my team. And that is Diogo Jota. I mean, underlying numbers still not incredible, but just keeps getting chances, keeps getting goals. I mean, the guy knows where the net is, gets himself in the position for it often, and sticks it away. I mean, he's been fantastic in fits and spurts for Liverpool since he's been there. And some of it's maybe because Salah's not there, and if and when Salah comes back, is Jota the one that's going to get sacrificed? It seems as though Nunez, despite the continual misses and woodwork hits, record levels of woodwork hitting tonight, literally from him, seems to sort of keep starting, which would be a shame because Jota's just so much a better finisher. So I'd like to hope that maybe Jota's still making a case for being the number nine when Salah comes back in on the right wing. But look, I mean, until that point, for sure, he's definitely going to be on making his way onto the fringe here because it's too tempting. I mean, I suppose Arsenal away in the next upcoming game weeks, and then, you know, with that threat of a blank and Salah coming back, there is a lot of mitigating factors working against him here. But like you say, vibes are just, yeah.
Yeah, they're high. And yeah, I think it did feel kind of like Salah's absence to go into AFCON and Jota's return from injury dovetailed a little bit. So it will be interesting to see that when both are fit and available, what sort of Liverpool's front three ends up being. I mean, obviously, if you'll notice, Luis Diaz also got an assist tonight, but there were rumours about him maybe being let go, I think, during January. So, yeah, I don't think that's necessarily going to happen. But, yeah, it's definitely worth thinking about from that point of view. All right, well, Andy, let's leave it there and let's take a quick break. And then when we return, we will be trying to catch each other in our honey traps.
Here at the FPL Lounge, we are keen to hear from you. You can join in the conversation on Twitter or Instagram at FPL_lounge. We will preview every game week throughout the season, exploring options for your chips and transfers. Subscribe to the show wherever you get your pods so that you have all the information you need before the game week deadline. Thanks for joining us in the FPL Lounge.
Welcome back, Lynn. So, Andy, honey trap this game week, but we might as well wrap up our swimming against the tide from last game week, which was swimming against Ivan Toney, being the fourth most transferred in player ahead of game week 22. And for the second week in a row, our swimming against the tide has kind of bitten us on the backside. Goal and an assist for Ivan Toney this evening. Not quite sure what the underlying numbers were for him. I guess that was one of the reasons why we swam against it first. Why we swam against it last game week. But I guess he is perhaps proving me wrong somewhat, in the sense that I kind of thought that Brentford's problems at the minute would be outweighed or would outweigh the sort of impact that he would have on his return. Although they're still not necessarily winning games, they're doing enough and at least looking a bit more threatening down the other end of the pitch, and he's definitely getting on the end of chances and maybe even creating them for himself a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, the goal tonight, it was a horrendous mistake from a Spurs defender, and he's like clean through on, if his own player played it through to him, he'd be about 15 yards offside. and then he's one-on-one with the keeper, and he, you know, it's a decent finish. But yeah, so you know, he's ended the game with quite a high XG total, but a lot of it will have come from that, I would have thought. And yeah, I guess one thing I hadn't considered maybe a bit was the whole Ange ball factor, right? And the fact that Tottenham are always like very open and have a high line, and Brentford are exactly the type of team to, I guess, exploit that. And Frank will have absolutely worked on that. He's very sort of shrewd tactically, right? But still, like, over the longer term, ultimately, like, Brentford's fixtures are still bad. They've got City next, then Wolves, then Liverpool and City again in the same double. So like, it's sort of obviously gone wrong this game week on that front. I mean, 17 points since he's come back for Ivan Toney is obviously an unbelievable return across two games. But longer term, do I see that keeping up? Like, I guess I don't. But then maybe can you move on from Toney if it dries up? You're surely not looking at City coming up twice in the next three game weeks and thinking he's still going to keep returning. But then he did score at the Etihad, I think, twice last season. So yeah. Who knows?
Were Brentford the only team to do the double over City last year? I feel like that is a stat that rings a bell.
Maybe. Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, look, I guess if you are looking for some money saving and want to downgrade Ollie Watkins, and I guess Ivan Toney's are still a pretty good place to go. But yeah, I still think, if I'm going to get rid of Ollie Watkins for the money, for financial reasons, I'm probably going to be looking for a cheaper forward than Ivan Toney. So yeah, not for me, thank you. But yeah, I think it's if Brentford's fixtures turn, then yeah, maybe I'll dip my toe back in the water. But not for now. Let's do a honey trap then, Andy. What proposition are you going to lay out for me this week to tempt me in to your honey trap?
Well, I've got one that probably won't surprise you because it's straight out of the Andy Case wheelhouse.
All right, here we go. TV games.
Caught in the honey trap. Well, that, you know, there are a few TV games, but no, it's not that. Saturday versus Sunday, but no, it's not that. The other one I feel like I tend to go for is as follows. I believe that there will be no more than four clean sheets this Premier League weekend.
Oh, I like this. Yeah, okay. No more than four.
I mean, I feel like generally, I haven't actually looked into this data-wise at all, but I feel like generally this season there hasn't been like loads of clean or as many clean sheets, you know, across the season as
yeah,
in previous years. Defenders have been struggling for, it feels like there's not been many regular clean sheet sort of keepers. Yeah.
I mean, longer games don't help that in general, but yeah, I think that you are probably right. I mean, there's been three so far this game week. There were five, six, seven. There were seven in game week 21. A couple of nil nils obviously help that pretty quick. Yeah, pretty quickly, don't they? Because that's four straight away. Four the game week before. Yeah, I mean, I guess you're going this way because high scoring teams are sort of playing each other. Is that loosely where you're going here?
Three in each of the three game weeks before that. Yeah, but which I hadn't really looked into when I made this, but I just was trying to aim for a number which I felt was a bit sort of down the middle. Yes, yeah, I mean, yeah. Essentially, I feel like, you know, Brighton Palace is often high scoring. Burnley, Fulham, you can definitely see both teams scoring there. Everton, Spurs, similarly. Maybe obviously Villa might keep a clean sheet against Sheffield United. You'd think Newcastle at home to Luton, but like pretty much all of the games on Sunday, I could see both teams scoring and probably mm-hmm. both teams scoring in, I wouldn't be surprised in Brentford City, you know, City conceded. They've kept sneaky a lot fewer clean sheets and they've been conceding more XG. I mean, they're still doing well. They're still like top five, but for them, you know, usually they're on about two or three XG conceded over a six game period, right? Consistently, as we've been looking at them over the last 3 or 4 years. And they're more like six or five, six, seven recently this, you know, this season. And they conceded obviously late against Burnley tonight, as we've been recording, and actually conceded 1.5 XG to Burnley at home today, which I thought, yeah, it was interesting. So anyway, yeah, could see goals there too.
Yeah, I mean, so basically, I need five clean sheets. If I take you up on this, I need five clean sheets to win, don't I? Which,
yes.
Yeah, you're not really tempting me in with that because I feel like feel like I'm inclined to agree with you. I mean, obviously you only need, I guess you need 1-0 and then three other teams to keep a clean sheet for it to kind of tip in your favour. I mean, you can't look, Spurs, Everton could be a 0-0. Burnley, Fulham could be a 0-0. Brighton, Palace, I think in theory could be a 0-0. Bournemouth, Forest could be a bit of a dull one. Man United, West Ham could be a 0-0.
Well, I mean, so, I'd never back Man United to keep clean sheet, but yeah,
no,
I know what
sure,
you mean.
But I just, it could be one of them sort of low scoring slog fests that, where there's not really a lot going on. But I don't think I'm tempted enough to take you up on this, I'm afraid. I'm going to leave it. I think partly also just because, like, you want to back goals. I don't want to be sitting there thinking, oh yeah, I want loads of clean sheets. I want a couple of nil nils that will help my honey trap this weekend. I think from the general kind of FPL things, we want goals, right? So yeah, I'm gonna back goals and not take you up on it. But I think it's an interesting one. I feel like if you'd have put the number lower, it would have been an obvious take. So it's one of those where the line's kind of like bang in the middle, and it's kind of hard to be either side of it, isn't it?
I mean, that's almost exactly, yeah. I kind of ummed and ahed between 3 and 4. And also because I couldn't settle on that, I had a completely different honey trap idea in mind that wasn't related to clean sheets at all. But 3, I just felt was a little overly generous. And I had one in my mind recently from when I said about it was something like no game on X day would have more goals than Y day, and it was like hugely skewed in your favor, like probability wise. I had that in the back of my mind, kind of going 3 feels like you're just gonna jump all over that.
Yeah, because at that point you only need 1-0 and another clean sheet basically. Well, I guess you need 2 more clean sheets for it to be 3 or more than 3, don't you? But yeah.
And as I was going down, I was looking at it thinking like 1-off Burnley or Fulham. You know, you only need, like, Everton, Spurs could be like 1-0 or 2-0 either way. There.
Yeah.
Although having said that, probably I feel like Everton more likely to keep a clean sheet than Spurs. Mm. Newcastle clean sheet against Luton, Villa clean sheet against Sheffield United. And suddenly I could be looking after Saturday and you've got at least like 3 in the bank already. Yeah. You know, so, but anyway, yeah.
I agree with you. Okay, all right. Well, mine is also goals related, and I think it's a bit more oniony, let's say. But I think there is a general trend for top teams to play out higher scoring games. I'm going with the highest scoring match of the weekend to be Arsenal versus Liverpool. If it is the joint highest scoring match, I'm going to take that too. So I guess any of the other 9 games has to be the clear highest scoring game of the weekend.
Okay. So Arsenal, Liverpool will have the most
or join goals, most goals.
Or no game will have more goals than Arsenal, Liverpool.
Yes.
Okay.
Semantics are always important, aren't they?
They are with this honey trap, yeah, for sure. So okay.
I think this is my niche in the honey trap, is where I offer you the field, but my proposition is something that you can absolutely see happening.
Yes. I mean, but that's perfect honey trap play, isn't
it,
really?
It is, yeah. It tickles your football fancy, but it also tickles your math fancy. you've got to do both.
A couple of good places to tickle me, that, for sure.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Play to your audience. Looking at it, obviously the point of the field is that, you know, you have a way more, even though each individual game you may not think has the chance to equal that one, you know, cumulatively, surely the field, you'd think. So I feel like I am going to have to take you, but I don't love it, because looking at each individual like battle, like that game versus any of the others individually, like I'm thinking, am I taking Arsenal Liverpool against Everton Spurs? Yes. Am I taking Arsenal Liverpool against Brighton Palace? Yes. Burnley Fulham? Yes. Newcastle Luton? I guess maybe there's like a 3 or 4 in there for Newcastle that might, and you could see them conceding with how they've been playing at the back recently.
I guess the point is you probably take them in a head-to-head in every, against every team.
Well, yeah, this is where I was going with it. Yeah, yeah, that's what I'm saying. So again, maybe like City could be 3-1, right? And I'm thinking in my head, Arsenal, Liverpool, I think 2-1's probably the minimum there. But it could easily be 2-2 or 3-2 or 4-2, right? And then, so, look, I feel like I've got to take it. I think you've got a really good chance here. You could be trapping me in.
We'll see. Well, we will see. I mean, ultimately, these are two of the three best defences for XGC conceded, for XG conceded so far this season. But yeah, I guess you know, broadly speaking, attack kind of outweighs defence, doesn't it? And yeah, these games against big or two big six teams going against each other do usually end up in goals rather than sort of defensive slugfests. Sometimes, apart from when Man United are involved, I feel like, you know, they've got a couple of nil-nils in them. But yeah, we want goals. But yeah, I don't think there'll be any higher scoring game than Arsenal-Liverpool this weekend, and you have taken me on it. Let's then move on to captaincy. And let's start with that City game on the Monday night. It's like pick your poison when it comes to City assets, isn't it? But I guess if you're bringing Erling Haaland back in this game week, it feels like you've got to be brave enough, if that's even the right word, to captain him. I guess he is still a minutes risk, though, even if he does start. I mean, we know full well that 60 minutes is plenty enough time for him to do plenty of damage. But maybe you'd be looking for a player that's perhaps guaranteed a few more minutes this game week.
Well, I mean, with Pep, I know who you're alluding to, but like, who could you be alluding to? Do you know what I mean? That could apply to a number of different people, right? That's the problem with him. Obviously, with Haaland getting 20 minutes off the bench in this game week, you'd probably, I don't know how you feel about this, I feel like he's if I had to put my money down, it'd be he's going to start, right?
Yeah, and then maybe get like
60. So if a starting Haaland is a captain shout and probably one of the better captain shouts, so I mean, yeah, there is the quandary you brought up earlier of like Alvarez, KDB, Haaland. How do you fit them all in? If KDB and Haaland are both still working back minutes, then maybe KDB takes a bit of a break this game week. But it's just so hard to know. So what's difficult this game week is there doesn't seem to be many other clear like options for captaincy. And so taking a bit of a gamble with Arsenal and Liverpool playing each other in particular. That being said, we have just both said we think there's a good chance of being a fair number of goals in that game. So, you know, if you own Jota or I guess any of the Arsenal front three, then
Saka maybe.
Well, we haven't even considered them ourselves really. But look, I think a lot of people are going to end up back to the default of if you're unsure, stick it on Haaland.
Yeah, I think that's completely fair and is probably where I'm going to end up. I guess there is maybe one other fixture, Andy, that might appeal from a captaincy point of view, and that's Sheffield United versus Aston Villa and therefore Ollie Watkins. You know, we did mention on our last pod that his underlying numbers are not that great or haven't been that great recently, but obviously he did return with a goal. I think he was unlucky not to get a second against Newcastle. Ultimately he is away from home, but playing against a team that defensively have made some improvements under Chris Wilder, but still don't have great underlying defensive numbers, and Villa obviously have been pretty threatening most of the year. So it does feel like maybe just in terms of the pure fixture, Watkins maybe would get the nod, but there really isn't that much else going on really here, is there, for the captaincy this game week?
No, I mean, look, the chances are, as it always works out, someone else is probably going to outscore those that we've mentioned, right? Jota could get a couple, you know, vibes is on the fringe, right? So if you've got Jota, I don't hate it at all, despite Arsenal's underlying defensive numbers actually being quite good and at home, right? Liverpool looking very, very in form at the moment, and they've got players coming back, and and yeah. But outside of that, it sounds like Isak's injured. So Newcastle's like attacking, like, you know, forefront is, it looks like it could be Gordon playing, you know, potentially through the middle again, which some people might argue makes him an option against Luton, who away from home in particular haven't been great at keeping clean sheets at all. But like,
yeah, I can't get on board with that, really.
Is Anthony Gordon better captain shout than like Erling Haaland? Do you know what I mean? Like, it's
no.
Yeah, or in any given, you know, obviously Brighton, if, you know, Evan Ferguson could start and bang a couple, or well, he's not fit, but you know, so any one of those attacking players could have a field day in that very attacking sort of Brighton side. Obviously, you've seen Spurs with Ange Ball. Those of their forwards got in on the act with goals or assists today. So a couple of those, you know, that any one of them gets a couple of returns, and you're laughing. But it's hard. It's just hard to consistently kind of be sure of that or predict, isn't it? And this is where annoyingly, I feel like the last three or four game weeks, I don't know whether this is across the board or just my particular team. I guess you notice it more when the decisions don't work in your favour. But there's been a lot of, and maybe it's because Haaland's been out, but a lot of close captaincy calls that have, you know, at the moment, 20, 30, 40 points is the difference between, for me, like 50k and top 10k, right? And that has pushed me that those three or four weeks of bad or, you know, captaincy decisions that haven't worked out is kind of drifted me further and further away, and that's sort of frustrating to take, like those fine margins. It feels like it's going to be similar again here, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's completely fair. I think, yeah, a lot of that is going to be down to being without Haaland, and at least for the last two game weeks, being without Mo Salah as well. So, or sorry, the last game week, and I guess including this one. So yeah, I think all of those decisions are, well, the captaincy decisions have been a little tighter. But yeah, I mean, in some respect, normal service can resume now. I think sort of almost perma-captaining Erling Haaland, at least while Mo Salah is out, is going to give many managers one less thing to think about. But yeah, I, without getting into sort of the sort of debate over how the game should be played and how useful the captaincy sort of weekly tip is, I'm not. I guess it's still a wrinkle of the game that you've got to think about week in, week out. And yeah, I think almost any City asset this game week, whichever one you think is going to end up with the most minutes, I think is definitely worth your armband. But I don't think Ollie Watkins is necessarily a bad second fiddle if you fancy being a little bit different this game week. All right then, Andy, let's leave it there and let's finish as we always do with a little game we like to call Who the Heck Is That? Each week, Andy and I take it in turns to pick a player from the FPL universe that has to be owned by at least 5% of managers, and the other person has to guess who it is. They get 5 clues, and if they guess it after the first clue, they get 5 points. After the second clue, they get 4 points, and so on and so forth. And each time they hear a new clue, they get 2 minutes to stick or twist on their previous guess, which means we don't reveal the answer to the end, so you can play along wherever you are listening to the FPL Lounge podcast. I made history last game week. I had a player in my head, would have had a 4-pointer, switched off it, and went back to it to get a 1-pointer. And yeah, we don't think that's ever happened before. So yeah, great stuff. And yeah, that 1 point really closed the gap after Andy had hit 5 in back-to-back game weeks. He currently leads 27-21 with a chance to extend that lead further. And frankly, if he does pick out a 5 here, then we are just going to end it. Like, we're going to end... Maybe not the pods, but we're definitely not playing this game ever again. Like, we're just not doing it.
I don't know how to say this without sounding like it's trying to rub salt in the wound or exceptionally patronising, but I would like to signify some credit for, I mean, you know, as gut-wrenching as it must be to go back to a player that you said earlier, if you hadn't, you would not have got any points,
yeah,
right?
Not very true, yeah.
So that takes like some courage and some gumption, right? So yep. You know, fair play to you for being bold. And
you're right, that does sound patronizing.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? Yeah, but I wanted to give you credit for it because fair. You know, yeah, it's I can imagine it must have been through gritted teeth. Yeah,
a little bit, but you know, as you say, in the end, you just gotta you know, take the points where they come. Even if it is just a singular point. Right, anyway, let's get this one. Let's get this whiz through this one as quickly, hopefully, as we can. Clue number one, then, is this player's sixth season in FPL. And while they are just 4 points off last season's total, they're some way off their highest ever finish. Who the heck is Stat?
Ooh, six is an awkward number. Just 4 points off of last season, but some way off their highest ever. Ollie Watkins couldn't be six, could he? I mean, maybe have we had him? Like, just a quick look. No, we have had Ollie Watkins, okay. So probably not him. Callum Wilson is someone else who springs to mind of the number six. He's maybe a little bit more than that, seven or eight seasons, but you said 4 points off last season's total. Is that what you said?
Yes.
But some way off his best. Well, I think he might have even had a 200 pointer at one point, Callum Wilson. But he feels around about in the right. I guess I'm trying to think what we've got last year. He had injuries and stuff again. He won't be on a particularly high total this time round. Yeah, so I think that's probably the bit that falls down there. He's not going to be 4 points off last year's total. Sixth season. Rashford? Probably more than six seasons. I wonder if it's someone like a Reece James. It hasn't had loads of points this year, but maybe didn't last year because of someone who will have had, or a Chilwell. 30 seconds. God, I've not even got one like Newcastle players. It was on before. Struggling to even think of someone.
10 seconds.
Saka, Martinelli.
5, 4, 3.
Well, maybe that doesn't help. Phil Foden.
No worries. Clue number two, then. This player started the season at his second ever highest starting price, but was £1 million less than he started last season, and so far this season has had a net drop of £0.1 million. Who the heck is Stat?
So, second highest starting price this year, but it was more £1 million less than last year. You wouldn't think a keeper's a full mil less. Even for a defender, a full mil less is... because what reason would... You'd have to have had a not great year last year to be... I suppose if you're saying 4 points off last year's total, then that's the sign that it wasn't a great year, maybe. A full mil would make me think midfielder or forward, because that's quite a drop for a defender or a keeper. So it's someone who... Someone who has done well this season, but... Or reasonably well, but not amazing last. But they said he's had a net drop this year as well. So that's weird, because it's got to be 5% owned, but also must have scored enough points to only have 4 points less than their last year's total. So this is very confusing. Okay. What a unique combination of things. So, is it, I can't think of anyone who's 6.9 or 5.9. This is difficult. I don't think it's Foden. Sixth season.
And 10 seconds.
Robbo? Wouldn't be a full mil. I mean, I haven't even...
That is your time.
I can't even come up with a name. I guess I'm sticking on Phil Foden in that instance.
Okay. Clue three, then. So I guess the the heads up that this clue, and it I don't know if it's changed, but it might have changed, was written before tonight's games.
Right.
Okay. So this player is currently in the top five most in form players in the game, which is the league, which is the game's calculation of in form. So a player's average score in all of his team's last games in the last 30 days and has had two price rises in the last two game weeks. Who the heck is Stat?
Well, also there's not been many games in the last 30 days. So two price rises, but he's 0.1 mil less than he started. So he'd obviously had a fair bit of a drop. Was one of the in-form players. I feel like, I don't know, because it's been cup games where Dallow's been getting goals. I thought I felt like I'd seen him have rises recently. Okay. Oh, God. Rises in the last two game weeks. Haven't really been tracking that. Six seasons. Was in form, so like must have got some returns in January since the start of the year. There's only been like what, two, maybe three, depending on when they played games. Is it my vibes, brethren? Old Diogo.
You have.
Because he's had form recently. But you said it was before this game week, but he has had still returns. Well, okay, I guess I've got a swap to Jota. Don't know what his price is at all at the moment.
Right, well, you switched.
Or what it was at the start of the season either.
Let's see if clue four makes things any clearer. So this player is not in the top five most owned at his club, nor the top 10 most owned at his position. Who the heck is Stat?
Right, I want to go back a step first. So six, does Jota fit the other thing first? Six, sixth season. Where did I get to him? It was form. Is there anyone else who we know has had returns recently? Solanke, would he be a full mil? Like less, you'd think he'd be more this season. For January, form player for January. Yeah, I mean, I feel like that could, it could fit Jota. Okay, so fifth, not in the top five highest owned at his club. Is that what you said?
Yeah.
Yeah. Trent, Salah, Nunes, I guess. Two other people owned more than him, I guess. Alisson, maybe. I mean, obviously, there's a few contenders, like maybe Van Dijk, maybe Robbo.
30 seconds.
Maybe, he feels like he'd be there or thereabouts. So I suppose it could fit. And not in the top whatever owned of his position. 10, did you say?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's definitely feasible. So, okay. Well, I think I'm sticking with probably with Jota.
10 seconds.
I can't think of anyone else who's got returns recently. Not really.
There we go. Out of time.
Maybe.
The clue number five then. Final clue, Mr. Case. So this player firmly in the Andy Kaye stable of boys, was classified as a forward last season, but as a midfielder this season. Who the heck is Stat?
I mean, I did not think 2 minutes ago that I'd be potentially on for 3 points here, but obviously that does fit for him. So you would certainly probably say he's in the stable. He was a forward last year and is a midfielder this year. Okay, so he's going to be, I think he's 7 point something price-wise. So if he's 0.1 less, he could be 7.4, he could be 7.9. So if he was 7.5 at the start, that could have been 8.5 last year. Was he as much as 8.5 last at the start of last year as a forward? There weren't many forwards priced that highly. But he'd had a good come off a good year, I think, hadn't he? So maybe, yeah, maybe that's possible. Yeah, so I think, yeah, that's enough probably information to stick with him. Are there any other possible, especially because you've said about returns recently? I think I'm just gonna have to stick.
All right, then. Final answer?
Yeah.
3 points it is, Andy Kaye. I mean, obviously the final clue obviously gave the game away, but there were some difficult clues before that, and I think you did pretty well, even if you did end up just kind of stumbling upon him. But yeah, he does fit all of the clues. So yeah, sixth season, he, at the time of writing the clues, he was on 76 points, and he got 80 last year. But obviously that's some way short of his 175 that he got in 21-22. Yeah, it was obviously classified as a forward last year, but started the season at £9 million last year. God. Which I guess if you're coming off the back of a 175-point season, maybe makes sense. But yeah, I mean, he wasn't in many teams last year, was he? Let's be honest. And I think that's, you know, obviously that was also to do with the fact that he didn't play many minutes last year and ended up injured for quite a big chunk of it. But yeah, obviously was very steep when Haaland was, what, 11.5 at the start of the season. Not really much competition there. But yeah, it was obviously in good FPL form. At the minute, I think you got all of the Liverpool players that are higher owned than him. Virgil was the one that you maybe weren't 100% sure on, but yeah, he is higher owned than Jota at the time of recording. Obviously not the top 10 in his position because there are loads of higher owned midfielders, especially given that this guy has been injured fairly recently. And yeah, I guess when I was looking at these stats, the one question that I did kind of have, and I don't know if you know the answer to this, was like, are his stats adjusted based on his classification as a midfielder, like in terms of the amount of points he's got per goal to make his seasons comparable?
What do you mean,
like,
points?
Well, like if he got 80 points last year based off 7 goals, then is that 80 points based, like according to the official site, is that 80 points based off 4 points a goal or 5 points a goal?
Oh, right, I see what you mean. Well, no, I imagine it will be based on whatever he was last year, so based on like 4 points a goal. Right.
Probably. I feel like they just need to add a flag then that sort of says what their position was, because for him it's changed and therefore it's kind of, yeah, it's not comparable, is it really? Like his,
yeah.
Because yeah, if it had got the same attacking returns last year, he'd have more points, basically, if he was classified as a midfielder instead.
Yeah, although he has got more goals and assists this year, so despite the fact he's getting more points for goals, he has got more of them. So.
Yeah, of course. But yeah, it's... Yeah,
I
just thought that was...
No, I mean, I'm surprised looking at his ownership now, he's as much as 10%, really. Obviously, he's been doing well recently. It's literally only that thing about the form where, you know, once you realise that there's only two or three games that could be over, and, you know, I literally have a visual of the tweet that I saw that we talked about. I don't know whether it was during the break or even on the show, but about of saying that he has stepped up since Mo Salah's been away and he's had like 3 goals and 2 assists or something, when I was trying to rack my brain for anyone who'd had very recent form. So yeah, and then obviously, yeah, once you land on someone that you think kind of works, and then the other clues start kind of is fitting for that person too, then yeah, you're off, aren't you?
Absolutely. Yeah, well, there we go. Yeah, 3 points for you, you landed 30 points for 21. That's feels quite large, doesn't it, that? But yeah, we'll do what we can to close that gap. Anyway, let's bring this one home, Andy. If our loyal listeners have any questions ahead of game week 23, how can they get in touch?
Well, they can find us on X or Instagram at @FPL_lounge. And how are you dealing with the premiums? I guess that's what we want to hear from you. What's the you're rushing to bring Haaland back in? What are you doing about having enough money for Salah when he inevitably comes back soon? Can you keep Trent? Does Connor Bradley? I'm surprised his name not come up once during this pod yet, because he's just come off the back of a clean sheet, two assists and a goal. Yeah, is he going to start coming into people's thinking and that enabling money elsewhere?
Be interesting to see, won't it? I think, yeah, if we see Trent in midfield, then that's probably also going to maybe increase his popularity. So, yeah, we'll have to wait and see. Do also remember to rate, review and subscribe wherever you get your podcast from. Andy and I would definitely really love to hear from you. So we will be back ahead of game week 24, probably around this time next week, Andy, because yeah, we're back into the usual rhythm of game weeks on a Saturday going forward. So yeah, until then,
thanks for joining us in the FPL Lounge.